Welcome to Martha Runs the World, a podcast with a new take on running, fitness, and all things health-oriented. I'm Martha Hughes, your host, and each week I present a new topic that is of interest to all runners. At my post, I am standing. 'Tis a dark, dreary night. The scenery around me, shut out from my sight. With my gun in my hand, I stand there alone, while my thoughts there are wandering to the loved ones at home, perchance in the slumbers or dreaming of me, while I stand here on picket in old Tennessee. Welcome to episode 93 of Martha Runs the World. It is Haunted Running Trails 2020. I could just say it's 2020 and Haunted Running Trails the entire year, and we'd all be screaming, pulling our hair, running to the hills, because it's been a really scary year for some of us. Very nightmarish. I'm talking about myself here. I don't know about you, but my year has been absolutely dreadful and scary. But I'm not going to do that, because that would be a really short episode. So no. But last year I started a tradition. I'm going to continue it for every Halloween. I do a special Halloween episode where I do three trails that have questionable histories, maybe some haunted past, some scary or frightful stories that might be of interest to run or hike or just check out. And I thought I'd share those with you. So I went out of my way to find three good ones tonight. These are really, really good ones. And kind of had to find some really good ones because this year has been so scary. So I had to make them really good. And I think I did it. So I'm going to start with the first one. The first one is the Ghost House Trail in Big Ridge State Park in Tennessee. And the poem that I read is from the old poem called In Old Tennessee. And I'll have a link to the entire poem on my website. But it's pretty long and it's very old. It dates back to the Civil War era. It's a pretty cool poem about a Civil War soldier that's far away from home, and he's stuck in Tennessee, and he's pretty scared. He doesn't really want to fight. He doesn't know what he's doing there. It's pretty cool. And the Ghost Ridge Trail is an interesting story. Now, Tennessee has a lot of state parks. They are really invested into having a lot of open land for the residents, and they take great pride in their state parks. Many of them have deep, rich histories, and one of them is known to runners as for the Frozen Head State Park. That one you know because it's where the Barkley Marathons are. But that one we're not going to talk about because you guys all know about that one already. So that we'll may talk about in another time. But Big Ridge State Park is about 25 miles north of Knoxville. It has 3,687 acres. It's very wooded, and the hills there are about run from 2,000 to 3,000 feet high. So they have a bit of mountains there, and it's very rolling. So, like Frozen Head, it has that kind of rolling hills feel, but it's steeper than you think. So it kind of surprises you in how much elevation it has there. But it's very wooded. There's a lot of dark areas in there. There's pines and wood trees and ferns and lots of springs and streams. And it's looks very pretty. Great place to hike and backpack and camp. Now, the trail itself is very short. It's the Ghost House Trail is only 1.2 miles, and it's a loop. But it truly has a creepy history. It goes past the ruins of the Hutchinson family farm, as well as their cemetery. And there are a few stories involving the Hutchinson family, including the little one of the phantom panting of their dog. So if you hear a panting of the dog while you're there and there's no dog around, that's their ghost. That's the ghost of their dog. There's also the first story was the mutilated ghost of settler Peter Graves walking the grounds. Peter Graves was one of the first settlers in the area, and he was scalped by the Native Americans. So he wanders the ground endlessly. So another one was the young witch was hanged by her father for being a witch. We don't know if she really was or not, but they just say that she was. And her spirit haunts the grist mill along the trail. You know, back in the old days, they could accuse you of being a witch and you weren't. I mean, 99% of the time you were not one, but they could just accuse you of it if they had a bad crop. Or if something went wrong or a cow died, they just accuse it on the person they didn't like, usually female. And if someone else agreed or if anyone agreed with you, then they just hang you or do something terrible with you. We didn't really burn them over here like they did in Europe, but they managed other ways to kill so-called quote-unquote witches. Not a very nice thing to do, not a very nice way to go either. Just a means of superstitious way of getting rid of people who don't conform. And apparently, now the family cemetery is very old and has a lot of the old stones there. And apparently, if you come along the family cemetery and you take pictures, some of the family ghosts may turn up in those pictures. That has been revealed by past people who have pictures, is that the family ghosts of the Hutchinson family may turn up in your photos. So who knows? You take a picture there, they may say hi. I don't have to say that, but they may be there. Maston Hutchinson was the master of the Hutchinson clan, and he owned the house. And his daughter, Mary, died of tuberculosis. That was fairly common thing to have happen. A lot of children died of tuberculosis, TB, in those days. Now, thankfully, we do have vaccines for that, so that doesn't happen anymore. But it did happen a lot back then. It was a dreadful way to die, too. Heard her cries from the bedroom of the house. The house is no longer there. It's pretty much just the foundation and the cellar. But you can still hear her cries, apparently, from that foundation, especially when it gets dark. Legend has it also, too, that later on, when the Hutchinsons were gone, when they finally moved out, or when they all died out, I guess it was, they all died out, and the house was abandoned because nobody really wanted to live there or live there, the neighbors would hear sounds. They would hear so many eerie sounds and cries from the area of the Hutchinsons' house that they all moved out. They were really scared of the area. It got a really bad reputation for being frightening over the years. The more recently, there's been a couple extra things that have happened, just as recently as the 1950s, in that park visitors and even rangers have seen a middle-aged man dressed in a red plaid flannel shirt and gray work pants. And he's been seen in the 50s and spotted as recently as 2003. Now, the last thing that's been seen in the area is park maintenance crews are on a different trail called the Dark Hollow Trail. That sounds spooky to me. They've heard a car running up and down the Dark Hollow Trail. Now, there's no cars on that trail. It's only hiking, so there aren't any cars, but they've been hearing one. It's probably maybe the old time when they were running liquor during Prohibition. That could have been from that era. Now, Dark Hollow Trail got its name because that area is so dark in the middle of the day that you need lanterns. And remember the old, if you hear that old song, The Holler, that's where those come from, the hollows, the hollers. That's where that term comes from, where these old neighborhoods, which is down towards the creeks, in the valleys of these mountain passes in the mountains in that area, they're so wooded and dark that they only see light from like 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. The rest of the time it's dark. And they're very creepy. But really, If it doesn't bother you or you want to see ghosts, it looks like a beautiful area to go for a trail run or a hike and do some camping. And if you see ghosts wandering around, just check them out because they won't bother you. And they may scare you a little bit, but they shouldn't bother you. Now, the next one, you have to ask yourself, do you believe? Do you believe in creatures that perhaps we haven't seen that could be out there? Different types of creatures that maybe live in the woods, live in the mountains, live in the unincorporated wilderness areas that are able to live separately from man, that maybe are smart enough to leave us alone and have their own lives generation after generation. In the northwest section of Washington State, in the Olympic National Park, there's a trail, the Hoh River Trail. If you've never been in that part of Washington State, it is magnificent. It's an amazing place. It really is. The Olympic National Park is between the Pacific Ocean and Puget Sound. The western side of now the Olympic Mountains are huge, and it's a really big mountain range. Eastern side is different than the western side, and the western side receives 100 to 170 inches of rain annually. It's a true temperate, they call it a temperate rainforest. The Olympic National Forest is 922,651 acres. There's 73 miles of coastline, 168 miles of road, and 611 miles of trail. There's a lot of land out there. That's not even a majority of it. The majority of the park is not seen by man, humans anyway. It's not seen by humans. Maybe it's seen by other creatures who walk on two legs. Maybe there's something else out there. Maybe there's some other creature that is sort of related to us, but not quite us. Just thousands of acres there. When I was in high school, we used to go up. We used to take family trips in the summertime, and we'd take 2 and 3 weeks and go someplace in the U.S. and take a lot of time. And one of the trips I remember most was driving up the coast up to British Columbia. And one of the places we spent a couple days in was the Olympic National Forest, National Park. It was amazing to me. We drove along the coast, and you drive up 101, and it takes you first to the Pacific Ocean, and then it turns right into the forest. And we went for a hike. I think we only went a couple miles in. We might have gone on the Hoh Trail. I don't know at that time. It was a long time ago. I was in high school, so long time ago. We went on this trail, and what I remember the most is these greens. Everything was green. These greens of every shade imaginable. Just green everywhere. I mean, you wonder why Seattle is called the Emerald City. It just, everything was green. It was wet. Outside of this area, it had been sunny and 70 degrees, but over here, it was green and damp. And I remember the constant drip of water. Drip, 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 drip. From all around us, everywhere you could look or heard, you heard this drip, drip, drip. Drip, drip, just everywhere. And there's moss and ferns and lichen and western hemlock trees and Sitka spruce. And there were trees that had fallen and these logs with moss all over them. Oops, sorry, I'm getting a little carried away with myself. And moss all over the trees and just covering everything, ferns everywhere. It was amazing, and we just walked into this. It was like this magical place. It was like a place I'd never seen before, and it was eerie. You just had the feeling that something was watching you. I mean, we didn't know. You always wondered, was there something else there? Well, there's a lot of animals there. There's plenty of big animals there. There's bear, deer, mountain lion, elk, coyotes, raccoons, and the smaller stuff, fox, bobcats, that kind of thing. But is there something else there? It's a perfect place for a creature to hang out, you would think, right? Whether you believe in mythical creatures or not, that could be real, we're going to talk about it, or I'm going to talk about it anyway, because it's fun, right? It's fun to speculate. I don't know if I believe in it. I don't know. I'm leaving it open. Usually I'm pretty skeptical about things, but I don't know. Nobody's proven to me that they're not there. Nobody's proven to me that they're there. Large footprints have been found in the area, usually along riverbeds and remote areas. If you travel deep inside, people say you have more of a chance of seeing Sasquatch. The Olympic Project is an association of dedicated researchers, scientists, trackers, and biologists determined to document a real-life Sasquatch. But as of the date of the story, 2014, they have no proof. They haven't found anything. But that doesn't mean it's not there, right? So what is a Sasquatch? The name comes from an adaptation of the British Columbian tribe, the Halkomelon. It was borrowed from a Canadian journalist who wrote a series of articles about Bigfoot in the 1920s. Native American tribes have told stories about mysterious ape man for hundreds of years. When trappers came into the area, the trappers heard the stories, and then the pioneers heard the stories, and other people, other white men and travelers and then settlers heard the stories as well. Who can resist a good tale about the ape men? Sasquatch was always described as a bipedal, ape-like creature, significantly larger than the average man and completely covered in dark brown or reddish hair. You know, of course, there's a lot of skepticism, but there are the true believers who, though they've never seen one, are confident they do exist. One has to think that if Bigfoot or Sasquatch does exist, that there are lots of them out there because they have to breed and live throughout all the hundreds of years that they've been talked about, right? They have to be pretty smart to live out in the wilderness and never be seen. So the Olympic Peninsula in the park would be a perfect place for them. They're protected. They have this vast area expanse where no one is. And as long as they stay away from the trails and the touristed areas, it's good as gold. The Bigfoot, now there is a Bigfoot trail, but it's not up in Washington State. It's the Klamath Siskiyou Mountains of Northwest California and Southwest Oregon are known as the Bigfoot Trail. And there's a lot of them up there.
We'll be right back.
Hey, quick question for you. Are you someone who wants to be fit, healthy, and happy? And what if I told you you could get your dream body by simply just listening to a podcast? I'm Josh.
And I'm KG, and we are the hosts of the Fit, Healthy, and Happy podcast.
Listen, we get it. Fitness isn't easy. Carbs, no carbs.
Just stop, okay? It doesn't have to be that complicated. And that's why we made this podcast. We get straight to the facts so you can become your best you.
So the way to check us out is click the link in the show notes or go search Fit, Healthy, and Happy podcast on any of the major podcast platforms. We'll see you soon.
Or so they say. Also a lot of pot growing up there, so I wonder if that has something to do with it. I don't know. The pot, if you smoke a lot of pot, do you see Bigfoot, or does Bigfoot like pot, or I don't know. Just speculating here. But, you know, you never know. There's also been a couple other things in the area, though. If you haven't been to this particular temperate rainforest, you really got to check it out. It's a really creepy place. I mean, it's cool and neat, but it's also really creepy because of the drip, of the constant drip of the water and always being damp all the time. Ken Kesey, in his book, Sometimes a Great Notion, he described it. I don't have the exact quote, but he described the coastal Oregon as living in the coast of Oregon is growing moss in between your toes. And I got to expect if you live out in the area, you feel like you have moss growing in between your toes. It's you get that feeling just stepping out there because you're never going to get dry. It's always wet all the time. But there's also been, you know, in the 80s, in the great satanic panic of the 80s, there were also reports of cloven hoofed robe Satanists in the area. So I don't know if that was actually true or if someone had a bad acid trip. Who knows? I don't. But if it's going to happen, it would be out there. And maybe, I don't know, maybe just stay away from the brown acid, right? All right. Now, in later years, in January 27th, 2018, near Lake Quinault, something big and terrifying knocked down a line of gigantic trees. Was it Sasquatch, as some whispered? They don't think so. It wasn't aliens or a secret government project either. Meteorologists theorize that a shifting warm and cool airs produced a rotor effect that knocked them down. And these are gigantic trees. These are big. It knocked them all down in a row. And that's what they think did it, but they're not exactly sure. So the whispers continue. So who knows what caused that? It's kind of an interesting video, and I'll have a link to that on the website so you can check it out. It's kind of strange. Now, the last one is a really cool path. It's a bike and hiking path that I discovered, and I really want to check it out when next time I'm in the East Coast. It's the Edwards Ferry and Haunted House Bend. And also, that's on the C&O Canal towpath. I'm going to talk a little bit about that, a little bit about the C&O Canal towpath and what you can find on it. It's pretty amazing. It's in Maryland and D.C., and it's also part of Georgetown, which is there, which by itself has a rich history with ghosts and the paranormal. Now, the bike walking and running path is 184 and a half miles long along the C&O Canal. It's actually longer than that if you go up. It keeps going up, called the Chesapeake Canal towpath, and it goes all the way up to Cumberland. So it goes the entire length of Maryland. It's really cool and very unique. So you have a really great source there. And I know you Maryland folks are very proud of it. I know that. Its history is as old as our country, and because of it, there are lots of stories and lots of ghost stories. I found some of them, and some of the most exciting ones I'll tell you about. I never realized, I really have never thought about this part of the country very much. Well, D.C., obviously, but outside of D.C., I never thought about that much. The canals were really important, especially in the beginnings of our country and in the Civil War, especially. They were being built in the 1830s, and it took years to build, and it took a lot of blood and cost lives to build these canals. The work was really hard. They used immigrants to build them, and, you know, usually the case that immigrants did build a lot of them. I know that the immigrants built the railroads as well, and the work was hard, and it wasn't safe at all. Poor hygiene, cholera, accidents. They happened on a daily basis. Thousands died and were buried along the canal in unmarked graves. The shadows of the dead can be seen by campfire at the edge of the woods if you look close from one of the hiker-biker campsites. Along the way on the canal towpath, and I think part of the towpath is paved and part of it is dirt, but it's really neat. It goes along the canal, and the canal follows the Potomac River. And they have these hiker-biker campsites that you can actually, you can backpack or bike this whole way if you want, and you can stay in these campsites. But this one campsite has a lot of ghost activity from these immigrants who died building the canal. So that's pretty spooky to me. I mean, the area is rich because it was so vital for the North to have these canals to get their supplies up the river, up the Potomac, so they used the canals for these supplies. Now, the stretch for the C&O Canal across from Harrison Island in the Potomac was one of the best locations to tie up canal boats overnight before the Battle of Ball's Bluff during the Civil War. The battle occurred on October 21st, 1861, on the Virginia side of the Potomac River at Harrison Island. The Canalers hated tying up their boats there because it was so close to the cemetery at Ball's Bluff, and they thought the cemetery was haunted, and they saw the ghost there every night, and it scared the Jesus out of them. They would see ghosts of unknown soldiers rising up, floating through the air all over the place, and they did not like to be there at all. It was a really scary place. It even scared their mules. Their mules refused to eat. Their mules refused to budge. It untied their boat lines and cast their canal boats adrift, so they would spend hours trying to get their canal boats back and trying to get their mules to do what they wanted to do. And if you know anything about animals, you'll know that mules are probably the most stubborn animal there is. And there you go. Now, I read on more than one website that if you really want a ghostly experience, camp at the Turtle Run hiker-biker campsite near Milepost 34. That's the place where all the activity is. So that's where you want to be. Hiker-biker campsite near Milepost 34 at Turtle Run. That is the hot spot, apparently. Another place that's really creepy and really full of activity is the Pawpaw Tunnel in Maryland. Construction on the tunnel was supposed to only be 2 years, but it wound up taking 14. The workers grew increasingly frustrated and angry, and riots broke out, and rumors of men murdering each other started. One story is of a man who died near a nearby house, and then the house was set afire. His charred remains were found, and some say his spirits wander in the tunnel. This is a long tunnel. This tunnel is 3,100 feet long. It's really long, and if you want to go into it, don't go without a flashlight or a headlamp. And if you're really scared of dark places or you have claustrophobia, it's not for you. Really, it's this place. Look up Pawpaw Tunnel and ghosts or haunted in Google, and you get a lot of responses. There's a lot of stuff. In fact, there's a lot of tours in the area, and they take you to the Pawpaw Tunnel. It's like a big ghost tourist place. It looks creepy. I mean, the pictures of it are really, really creepy looking. Let me tell you. Now, there's another place, Rock Hall, and it was built in 1812 by Roger Johnson. During the 1800s and even into the 1900s, there weren't any hospitals, and people died at home. And in this place, in Rock Hall, the owners talk about the lights turning themselves on, the television turning itself off and on whenever, and the owners not knowing what's going on. So I suspect that the people who died in this residence doing it. The thing with it, this is a beautiful, beautiful trail, and it's gorgeous, especially I would think in the fall or the spring, not in the summer with the humidity, and not in the winter with the snow. Well, recent snow would be kind of nice, I guess, but it just is beautiful with all the history and the buildings and the especially the older buildings from the colonial time, would just be gorgeous. The C&O Canal, the area around the canal, especially around the towns and things, was always the seediest. It was, you know, it's like ports. You know, you go to a port, a city port, it's always the seedy part of town. Well, yeah, it's where the sailors are, you know, things like that. So, you know, the area around the canal, especially around like Georgetown, It was not known to be a nice place. And there's one story where a police officer in the 1890s was walking his beat along the canal at night, and he saw this ghostly apparition waving a bloody razor. And you know the old straight razors in the day when the men used them? He had it out, and it was bloody, this ghostly apparition. And this scared him. This really scared him. It turned out that later that night, a man killed one of his boarders with a straight razor. Weird, huh? Yeah, that would creep me out big time, I'm telling you. So yeah, that would. The incident sparked a whole bunch of other stories about ghosts the people had seen along the canal. And then the policemen started to refuse to work there. They didn't want to be down by the canal at all, especially at night. They said, no way, we're not going down there at night. So that area was like off limits to people. People didn't want to go down there at night for a long time. And Georgetown has its share of have ghosts and apparitions. As a matter of fact, there's a whole book written about ghosts. Tim Krepp, he wrote it, The Ghosts of Georgetown. And one of the stories he tells is of Mrs. Eden, E-D-E-N, Emma Dorothy Eliza Nevitt Southwark. She called herself Mrs. Eden. She was a prolific writer in the 1800s. She had two kids, but she was abandoned by her father-in-law and her husband, so she had to find a means to pay her way, and she began writing these cheap novels. But she made enough money to support herself and her children, which is pretty good in the 1800s for a woman. So she did okay. She lived in a little cottage, and she supported herself. The Civil War was starting, and she was so terrified that the Confederates were going to come through and kill everybody. But one day, she heard this voice. There are four of you here. You'll be fine. She stayed in the house and lived there, and she was okay. She and her family were okay, and she lived there until her death. After her death, the house passed through a few owners and became an ice cream shop. An Italian greengrocer set up his cart in front, and he sees Mrs. Southworth, Eden, coming out of the garden and starts talking to him. And he panicked and ran away. Yeah, I think I would too. It was presumed that when her little cottage was torn down, her ghost passed and was not seen again. And there are a lot of little stories like that. There's also one last thing in Georgetown. I can't leave without talking about the house used in the Exorcist movie. It's known as the Exorcist House, but it doesn't look like it does in the movie. They actually added a third story so that the priest could jump out and land on the steps, because the way the house is, if he jumped out, he would just land right into the garden, and that would be kind of anticlimactic. So they built like the third story that he landed on the steps. So if you walk past it, you see the stairs there, which you recognize, but the house you probably wouldn't recognize. I just love the area. I've never been there. I haven't been to Georgetown. I've been to D.C., but I don't think I've made it to Georgetown. But it's such a beautiful area with all those old buildings. And there's a lot of other stories. But that area is real close to the canal. I would say just go there and just enjoy it. And if you happen to see some ghosts, hey, it's all part of it. It's extra, right? Get more for your money. Yeah, these are three places that have some interesting and maybe thrilling hikes or runs you can do, some trail runs you can do in different parts of the U.S. So enjoy them. And I hope you enjoyed this year's Haunted Trail Runs 2020. And for all the information on all three different trails, you can go to the website at martharunstheworld.com. If you have any comments, suggestions, questions, or any ideas for future shows, you can email me at martharunstheworld@gmail.com. And until next week, let's tie up our shoelaces and go for a run.